morning. My name is Michael McCusker. Today is the last day of spring up here at the 45th parallel north, but never more again the good old summertime of yore anywhere on the planet, north or south. After all, the poles are melting and Gaia's belly is more than ever a torrid zone. The possibility of human extinction lies just over the horizon. It has been a very real possibility since the advent of the nuclear age 75 years ago. But now the escalating probability of rapidly drastic climate change might very well also make it more likely as an augury for nuclear recklessness, although the obverse holds the potent cards. It certainly does matter how abruptly we as a species have reached this crucible, all the while we were sleepwalking, it might be said. But it matters now most of all if we have a final opportunity to reverse and possibly escape the harshest consequences of a roasting, perhaps even inflammable, home planet with no alternative planet B. We have made beloved Sol, the giver of life, our deadly enemy. Its light and warmth, the blinding third-degree burn of thermocide. It is startling to be made forcibly aware that the long evolution of humanity is suddenly reaching a point of climax, that our species is indeed cause and effect of what seems historically to be the sixth major extinction of biological life on Earth. That our infinite emancipation from primeval savagery to urbane civilization has by its very own intellectual and technological progress been the method of sealing our doom. We are even able to create from words of our design names for our formidable self-proclaimed dilemma, climate change and global warming, which are essentially defined by Wikipedia on the worldwide digital internet, so far the essential epitome of human invention. The first is overall climate change, which occurs when changes in climate system result in weather patterns that last for at least a few decades and maybe millions of years. Global warming is a long-term rise in the average temperature of Earth's climate system, an aspect of climate change indicated by temperature measurements and by multiple effects of warming. The term commonly refers to observed and continuing rise in average air and ocean temperatures since 1900, caused mainly by emission of so-called greenhouse gases in the modern industrial economy. There are at least a dozen major human-caused factors simultaneously provoking climate change and subsequently overheating Earth's atmosphere and environment. Foremost among this yardstick is humanity's ever-expanding population, which is both source and propellant and purpose for all the rest. Like every other species that has come alive on the planet, humanity breeds compulsively. Equivalent to rats is one description, and we ravage everything everywhere, including ourselves. The burning of fossil fuels saturates the upper atmosphere and tears up protective ozone that shields earthly life from lethal ultraviolet rays. The rays screened by upper-level ozone, which is essentially an unstable form of oxygen in the upper atmosphere, are precisely those that are absorbed by DNA and cremate biological cells of plant, animal, and human. It would seem almost counterintuitive that as we more and better understand how vital sunlight is to health and psychological well-being, our industrial civilization is rapidly stripping away its beneficial attributes. Aside from the worldwide mal effects of intense global warming, prolonged exposure to the sun results in one form or another of skin cancer. Without sufficient ozone, almost any exposure to sunlight will have shattering effects to the human population. At the same time that pollution of the atmosphere shreds ozone, it increases the CO2, carbon dioxide, concentration. This increase is essentially proportional to fossil fuel combustion for electricity transmission, transportation. Visualize many hundreds of motor vehicles stuck in traffic gridlocks every day during rush hours all over the industrial world, their motors burning gasoline and oil the entire time. And for heating and cooling, don't forget, and also the incredibly excessive manufacture of cement. It is predicted that we will very soon, in little more than a decade perhaps, reach carbon dioxide concentrations that have not existed on Earth in the last 50 million years, when the planet was more or less a boiling cauldron, or at least punctuated with a vast orchestra of active volcanoes. And deforestation. Without the remaining forests of Asia and the Americas, we bequeath our descendants an arid world, a hot greenhouse without shade to shield them from the sun's ultraviolet rays. Water systems dry up without the cooler climates of forests. Biological diversity disappears. Marine life vanishes. Also, oxygen itself. And so, beloved Saul, heavenly Helios, Apollo's chariot, of this world both eye and soul, saith Milton, heats up our lowly planet, while at the same time depletion of the ozone screen by Homo sapiens, otherwise known as the wise species, makes sunlight dangerous. The weather heats up in oscillating cycles of storm and drought. Summers in particular are increasingly hot and dry. Contrarily, cyclonic and hurricane force storms are made more frequent and violent. Desertification is more common. Droughts are longer and more frequent, as are immense wildfires that also burn towns and villages, plus farmlands, orchards, and parks. The polar ice caps are melting, raising ocean levels and releasing frozen methane from Arctic seabeds. Coastal ports and cities are critically endangered of drowning. And, of course, methane and oxide emissions are also being released from the soil by mining activities. Think also of huge herds of defecating cows and other livestock, as well as billowing factory smokestacks, sort of a smelly smog. Greenhouse gases magnify heat radiated back to Earth from an invisible atmospheric ceiling that is perforated by acidic chemicals released by pesticides, petroleum, and fluorocarbons in a yo-yo aspect. Defoliants and pesticides have in less than a century been absorbed in everything. And think also of aerosol propellants that eat away the ozone layer and which began the original concern of the greenhouse effect of atmospheric deterioration. Their chlorofluorocarbon use as triggers were supposedly banned more than 40 years ago when the ozone hole was as big as North America, but they really weren't. Humanity has built a global greenhouse and is trapped within it. Being burned up by the sun, however, is merely one of myriad methods our genius has devised to obliterate our presence on this planet. The variety is exotic. Nuclear, chemical, or biological warfare can each and all put an abrupt end to us, of course, yet our self-annihilation seems more likely a long strangulation or baking from the toxic menu of pollutants we have poured into the land, sky, oceans, and rivers, which return to us as acid rain or killer smog, not to mention such other lethal byproducts as poisoned or irradiated soil. All of the above cooked on the solar stove. We have pummeled and plundered our home planet as though it offered an inexhaustible feast without charge or cleanup. But the consequences of our careless and excessive self-indulgence are converging. It is more than conceivable that any or a mixture of these swirling vexations might trigger either immediate or imminent holocaust, such as berserk thermonuclear shattering of all terrestrial life. Total biocide. So what on earth are we able to do about our prospective self-inflicted dusty death, as phrased by Shakespeare? Our paradoxical paralysis stems primarily from disbelief at human eclipse so unexpectedly. At the pinnacle of enlightened civilization and the advent of truly universal experience and adventure, so to speak. Yet, as a result of the threat of extinction, our problems suddenly seem irresolvably vast and complex, and solutions nearly impossible to agree upon. Postponing answers and actions, however, leads almost always, as has been documented about bigotries, to denial and rejection. We know in our heart of hearts, and in our brains also, that we must stop abusing Mother Earth, but we find infinite rationale for continuing our mutilation. The lethal byproducts of our way of life are of less concern than our unwillingness to reverse their harm. Even possible or even probable extinction does not seem enough of a goad to dissuade a majority opinion from pursuit of what is popularly considered to be the good life. Although there is considerable political rift in the USA about climate change, especially at the pinnacle of government power, the real critical partisan divide might be between generations, the more passively elderly who will quit the planet soon versus the young who are desperate to reverse the possibility of a harrowing future while there yet remains a chance before it is too late, which it appears to be rapidly becoming. Perhaps most adult humans currently alive on Earth will most likely not experience the severe ravages of worsening climate change, perhaps consoling themselves that they will be dead before it really kicks in. Yet perceiving death as the only escape is probably not a satisfactory consolation. And the prospect of each succeeding generation being aware the world will be a more dreadful place to live in for their heirs is not much of a consolation either. If indeed we who are alive now do not seriously reverse direction and sweat blood to mitigate our present course toward the anticipated sixth extinction, the upheaval and chaos to human survival on good Mother Earth Gaia will most assuredly be immense and catastrophic. And as an addendum, confronted as we are with the possibility of having made Earth virtually uninhabitable for continuance of organic life, what might be the probabilities of seeking refuge off-planet? Our neighborhood solar system is not neighborly. And although scientists have relatively recently discovered the presence of planets within other solar systems in the galaxy, that is not going to be much help either. If there is a friendly human-sustaining planet B out there in the near cosmos for humanity to resettle, we probably won't find it in time. Although we live in an expanding universe, human civilization appears doomed on a single planet. It is possible there might be millions, perhaps even billions, of human-compatible planet Bs throughout the universe, or multiple universes, which makes a person wonder if other sentient species have prospered or imploded on home planets on which they, like us, originated, perhaps even expanded from. This, in turn, poses the irresistible question that has nagged humanity since it first realized it is a galactic species as well as a terrestrial being. Are we one of many intelligent species scattered throughout the universe, or are we the only thinking life form in all creation? We might not have the chance to know the answer. And that was, I must say, not, if not exclusively, my opinion, and perhaps my opinion only, in all of those cosmos that might or might not have a planet B. somewhere among them. And now, somewhat in the same viewpoint, I'd like to read an article by The Guardian, from The Guardian, I beg your pardon, by Sam Wolfson. Wiped out, America's love of luxury toilet paper is destroying Canadian forests. Major brands' refusal to use sustainable materials is having a devastating impact on forests and climate, a new report says. We are becoming more aware about the damage single-use plastics and fast fashion has on the environment. Yet there is one product we all throw away every single day that, so far, has not been a major part of conversations about sustainability: toilet paper. But America's heavy use of toilet paper, particularly the pillowy soft kind, is worsening climate change and taking, quote, a dramatic and irreversible toll, unquote, on forests, especially the Canadian boreal forests, according to a new report by two major environmental groups, the Natural Resources Defense Council, the NRDC, and Stand.Earth. The boreal forest covers almost 60% of Canada and is home to 600 indigenous communities. Its huge size means it can absorb large amounts of carbon dioxide from the atmosphere, the equivalent to the annual emissions of 24 million cars each year. The report found that major brands' refusal to switch to sustainable materials in toilet paper is having a devastating impact on forests and climate. About 28 million acres of Canadian boreal forest is cut down each year, an area the size of Pennsylvania. Virgin pulp, the key ingredient in toilet paper, accounted for 23% of Canada's forest product exports. Americans are particularly to blame for this crisis. They make up just over 4% of the world's population, yet account for more than 20% of global tissue consumption. The average four-person household in the U.S. uses over 100 pounds of toilet paper a year. Major toilet paper brands have refused to use more sustainable materials, the report says, because Americans tend to be more concerned than the rest of the world about ideal toilet paper texture in their homes, largely due to decades of marketing around toilet paper softness. Previous reports into the environmental impact of toilet paper have found American desire for super soft, multi-ply toilet paper to be worse than Hummers for the environment. Are there any options out there to prevent this destruction? Well, in ancient Rome, they used a sponge on a stick, which they would then leave in a pot of vinegar to be used again. The Talmud, the central text of Jewish law, prescribes a handful of gravel with stones to be the size of an olive, quote unquote, or a nut or an egg for greatest effectiveness. Fortunately, we are unlikely to have to resort to such measures. Not all toilet paper is equally damaging, and many manufacturers are already making more environmentally friendly products using recycled materials. The authors offer a scorecard system to rate the brands that have the biggest environmental impact. It's mostly the big brands of quilted paper that score badly, with Charmin UltraSoft, Kirkland Signature, and Angel Soft all receiving F grades because they contain little or no recycled material. Brands that use recycled paper, such as Seventh Generation and Natural Value, received an A grade. Notably, they say that recycled materials are more commonly used in away-from-home tissue brands, like those found at offices or airports, where marketing for softness is less crucial. So next time you're greeted at the departure gate by toilet paper with a texture similar to a handful of gravel, you can take solace in the fact you're saving the forests. And that was by Sam Wolfson. Wiped out, America's love of luxury toilet paper is destroying Canadian forests, and it appeared in The Guardian. And now, from the Newport News Times, June 7th, 2019, support the Energy Innovation and Carbon Dividend Act by Diane Pugh. Nearly everyone has heard about the Green New Deal because politicians are debating it on major networks every day. But did you know that there is a bill already in Congress that could begin the solution to the ongoing climate crisis? It is a carbon fee and dividend bill that would place fees on carbon usage, redistributing those fees back to the public in the form of a monthly dividend check. Learn everything you need to know at citizensclimatelobby.org. I am a member of the nonpartisan Citizens Climate Lobby, a group that has over 500 chapters worldwide and has been focused on promoting a carbon fee and dividend to the public and our congressmen for over 10 years. In June, hundreds of members will travel to Washington from all over the country to once again discuss the urgency of limiting this country's carbon pollution. H.R. 763 would reduce America's emissions by at least 40% in the first 12 years. Economists and scientists believe it's the most effective method to limit climate change. As a bonus, it's estimated that it will create 2 million jobs to boost the economy. Why is passing a carbon fee and dividend so urgent? Last year, the United Nations report on climate provided by the Intergovernmental Panel on Climate Change, IPCC, states that we have only 10 to 12 years to limit our CO2 emissions before there will be catastrophic consequences. These consequences are already becoming apparent across the planet. Record temperatures, once-in-a-hundred-year storms that are occurring regularly, record droughts and forest fires, and rising sea levels. The extinction rate for plants and animals is 1,000 to 10,000 times higher than normal. Even the U.S. Navy is preparing its bases for the effects of these changes. The U.S. should have started reducing use of fossil fuels much sooner, so why haven't we? Companies like Exxon and Shell have known about the damage that excessive use of fossil fuels could create for more than 40 years. They not only chose to bury the evidence, but they adopted a misinformation campaign to discredit the science, and they've contributed a great deal of money to many campaigns in order to sway legislation. Sometimes when I talk about the climate crisis, I feel like one of those crazy men on the street corner with a sign that says, "The world is ending." It may not be ending, but it is definitely changing. When I first became an activist, the leaders of various groups said, "Don't scare people, be positive." And I'm still positive. There is a huge youth movement beginning because they know their future is in danger and they will not be ignored. They are demanding action. Many of our new politicians as well are forcing this issue to the forefront. There are hundreds of innovative ideas out there that could increase sustainability, such as paper made of bamboo, so trees can do the job they were meant to do, clothing made of hemp, pavements made with recycled plastic. If every country worked in a partnership, we could create a world run on sustainable energy with resulting successful economies. What can you do? You can ask your U.S. congressperson to sponsor or at least support the Energy Innovation and Carbon Dividend Act, H.R. 763. You can also ask them to join the Nonpartisan Climate Solutions Caucus. You can email or call your senators asking them to support H.R. 763 so they understand that this is a priority issue. You can join or support local climate groups such as Citizens Climate Lobby or 350.org. And you can ask your county commissioners about the Lincoln County Public-Private Climate Partnership. In Newport, you can ask your city councilors to support a sustainability committee like the ones already adopted in Lincoln City and Yahats and many other cities in Oregon, including Portland. Many changes will take place in the next 20 years. Many decisions will be made concerning climate, population, waste management, agriculture, and so much more. Let's start making the right choices. Support H.R. 763. And that was by Diane Pugh, who is a member of Citizens Climate Lobby. She lives in Newport and wrote this for the Newport News Times. And now, in regard to the departure of Sarah Huckabee Sanders, I would like to read something that I wrote a couple of years back, actually, about her and her job, and I called it the picture of Sarah Huckabee Sanders. Has anyone lately reread Oscar Wilde's famously infamous novel, The Picture of Dorian Gray, or rewatched the 1945 movie of the same name with a magnificently grotesque portrait by Ivan Albright? In the possibility some of you might not remember the essentials, it was notoriously noted in the late Victorian era of its publication to have been called a homoerotic novel. But this is not about that. The original story was pegged on a just-finished painting of a glorious young man whose evil deeds to both women and men, as subsequent years wore on, never flawed his eternally youthful appearance, but instead the portrait reflected his incessant, unabated grotesquerie. So now imagine an immediately contemporary distortion of Wilde's story, that rather than a painting, the real-life face of Sarah Huckabee Sanders, as she almost daily commits perjury to members of the American media and virtually shamelessly parrots the lies of Donald Trump. The basic dissimilarity is that Sarah Huckabee Sanders' face is the canvas that minutely transmogrifies into a subtle degradation of her features with every falsehood she reiterates straight out of Trump's lying mouth. She acts as his doppelduper, a fierce caricature of his diseased deceit and monstrous megalomania. Trump's lies flow out from him like contaminated water. He is unable and unwilling to distinguish fact from fake, and perversely denounces anyone who refutes his trumped-up fabrications as liars and fakes, quote-unquote. He remains unaffected by the chaos and evil he recklessly provokes because he absolutely has no sense of a moral compass other than his own loathsome personal pathologies. Sarah Huckabee Sanders seems unaware of her deforming surrogacy, yet each twice-told lie ripples across her face as a disfiguring metastasis. All that bad karma settles in her lying eyes and distasteful mouth. She is literally the public face of Donald Trump. And that was something I wrote a couple of years back, and probably the last chance I will have of reading it again. The Picture of Sarah Huckabee Sanders. And this is Michael McCusker. Tomorrow's advent of summer might also be commemorated as the date 237 years ago, when the United States Constitution was ratified on June 21, 1788, following New Hampshire's becoming the ninth and last needed state to approve its becoming the structure of American governance. After 3 months of debate by delegates of the original post-revolutionary 13 states the previous year, a new framework of governing laws to replace a failed early attempt at democracy was signed and sent to the states to ratify. The nation might once again be in a similar situation in which its laws, and especially human rights, are being treated as disposable decrement at the highest levels of current government. In the words of French philosopher Jean-Paul Sartre, who was born June 21, 1905, freedom is what you do with what's been done to you. Happy solstice.